is after them, but it's Fahin who's barreling clear up the hill, and he is a machine. Fahin maintains his unbeaten record, and it's a treble for Willie Mullins and Ruby Walsh. Fahin's a champion. Arctic Forest.
Hello, welcome to episode 4 of the Cheltenham Countdown series, as brought to you by the From the Horse's Mouth podcast. Now, Ruby Walsh, Rory De Largy, we're going to look ahead to the greatest show on turf, and we're doing it one day after the Dublin Racing Festival has finished. We're recording the Monday after DRF. What a weekend. We'll get into a few facts from that and how it will affect the betting for the Cheltenham Festival. Speaking of the Cheltenham Festival, as of last Friday, non-runner money back on all races here at Paddy Power. Now, before I bring in Ruby and Rory, as ever, if you are listening to this as a podcast, I would urge you to check out our new Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel, where you can watch these episodes. They go live Tuesday noon every week, and you have a chance of winning a free bet. Simply like, subscribe, and comment with a question for the guys. And hopefully, you might get that question read out, and we will pick one person each week who wins a 50 quid free bet. So on that, before we go back to DRF, I'm going to read out the first question, lads. It's from David Atkinson. Well done, David. You won yourself a free bet. The question here, Ruby and Rory, are you both confident, this is well-timed, that Gallop and Deschamps will stay the Gold Cup trip? Could he be another horse like Florida Pearl, one man who stayed 3 miles, but not the distance of the Gold Cup? I'll go to you, Rory, first.
Yes, it's a question I thought was well worth asking before the weekend. Because, you know, we expect him to stay, but, you know, he'd done most of his racing up to 2 mile 5. Yeah, 3 mile novice winner in Grade 1 company at Punchestown, of course. But horses who stay over hurdles don't always stay over fences, particularly if they're very fast jumpers as well. I remember Dublin Flyer, who was a very slow hurdler, stayed 3 1/4 miles, but didn't stay beyond 2 mile 5 as a chaser because he's a brilliant jumper of a fence. So it's not guaranteed, but essentially you're looking at the race itself. For a long way, I thought, you know, he's going to need to stay this to win because it looked like it was going to be a bit of a battle of attrition. And he looked for a long way, he was just going to fall. And I know Fury Road weakens late on, but I thought he picked up halfway up the running. Aside from the other horse weakening, Sattler was finishing as well. But I did think he picked up late in the day to show that the trip was well within his compass, and I think he will stay the 3 1/4 miles at Cheltenham. I don't think that's the only question, obviously.
Oh, okay.
But I think stamina's now not completely put to bed because, again, it's a different test at Cheltenham, but I thought he did show real stamina on the day to win the Irish Gold Cup.
OK, asked and answered. Ruby, you put great stock from previous senior on Racing TV and RT in how the horse kicks on after the winning line. There was a lot made on RT about Gallop and the shot. It took Paul a while to pull him up.
Yeah, I look at, to me, yeah, and as a jockey, you'd often be looking for hints. And again, like Rory says, can either of us or you, no one can guarantee anybody he's going to get 3 1/4. In my opinion, he most likely will. I believe he will. I thought the way he hit the line and the way he went through the line wasn't like a tired horse. And as Rory has another point to put to it, but to me, race wasn't run frantically early, but it built from a long way out. Fury Road got involved. And when you start to up the ante a long way from home, you make it a stamina contest. And I liked the way he finished, and I liked the way he went through the line, and I think he'll get 3 1/4.
Well, there you go, David. Positive noises about galloping, staying the trip. Hope you've backed him each way, because, or not each way, win only, because there's chances he will stay and won't be another Florida Pearl and one man. What a weekend, lads. Dublin Racing Festival, stories abound. Before we get stuck into the Arco, the Brown Advisory and the Ryanair, highlight from the weekend, Rory, please.
From a personal point of view, I'm going to make my highlight what I enjoyed over the weekend, which is actually slightly outside the racing. Great racing to watch. Really, really good to be there for the 2 days. Really enjoyed actually running into people I haven't seen some in years, actually, at the races. And everyone seemed to, I know there was a talk about it was hard to get a pint on the Saturday, which was hard enough on the Sunday as well, but everyone I spoke to was having a really good time, and it was an incredibly enjoyable meeting to go to, right up there with Cheltenham.
Okay, so the whole thing was
the first time I've done the DRF. Oh,
okay, so the whole thing was the highlight.
Yeah, pretty much.
Not getting a Lewis home, was it?
The Lewis was really good as well. But yeah. I enjoyed getting to the races as well.
Okay.
Getting to the races can be a massive pain in the backside, and I don't drive. So I'm reliant on public transport, and the system here is tremendous.
Well,
it's a 10-minute walk.
You are the first person that has ever said the public transport system in Ireland.
Well, not in all of Ireland, obviously. I haven't grown up in County Antrim. The idea of getting a bus or a train anywhere is a bit of a nightmare. But yeah, I find it really easy. If I go racing at the London tracks at Sandown or Kempton, it's a real pain. It's a real pain to get there, and it feels like it's taking all day. Here it was enjoyable, and you see people are going to the races. The fair chance of having a chat there as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I had discussions on the Lewis coming home on the Saturday and Sunday with lads who'd been there, and it was just really good to do that.
When they were sober and it was okay.
Yeah, they were all sober. Yeah.
Happy days. All right, good stuff. Ruby, holiday of the weekend?
Yeah, similar to Rory. I was there obviously early on Saturday. I was at a meeting with RT or whatever. But to watch the gates open and people come streaming in.
Wow, you don't get
you
that.
Knew there was a huge influx of English people because the Irish do not go racing early. But they were flowing into Leopardstown from very, very early. To watch them 10, 12 deep around the parade ring, waiting for the horses in the first race, the grower that went up with it. There was some brilliant racing, some big blowouts as well as good results. But I just thought the atmosphere, the noise, the amount of people that were there, I thought it was great to see it.
There's plenty of chat about what racing does wrong. But I think DRF is definitely one that they've absolutely nailed. And
that was the sixth edition. And yeah. I got a bit of stick from the authorities when I said initially, Leopardstown needs to be selling out for this to have achieved what it should achieve. And it's almost there.
Well, I mean, the talk is you wouldn't want too many more people there.
No, you wouldn't. Yeah. You wouldn't. 18, they say, and it looks about the limit that you can get in Leopardstown. But two 18s is 36. They were just under that. Yeah. But it was, you know, bang up there. And that, to me, when this was conceived or thought up of, this is what the aim should be, and it's nearly there.
It's great to have a positive story, and plenty of stories, obviously, on the racing front, and we'll get to those now, because we're going to talk about the Arkell Trophy. There was a big trial, or a big race itself, over the weekend in the Irish Arkell.
Sorry, and I meant to pick somebody else up on this today.
Okay, trials.
These weren't trials.
Yeah.
Cheltenham trials, they're set up, their prize money level, their grade is at trials. Dublin Racing Festival, they're not trials.
But
these were all grade one race with huge pots, and some horses might not come forward from here. Some horses might have had their day.
Yeah, I was going to say, but
Willie Mullins, pointers.
Yeah. But like, he does run more horses in these races than he's going to run at Cheltenham because he...
He won't. He will have the same amount, if not more, runners at Cheltenham and the same amount of horses again at Punchestown. To me, they're pointers. They're significant races in the calendar. Christmas to the Dublin Racing Festival to Cheltenham. Willie might skip entry with a lot of horses and they'd all go to Punchestown again. But to me, they're milestones and you can call them pointers, but they most certainly aren't trials, Rory.
No. And it's not just about Cheltenham with Willie's either. It's DRF, Cheltenham and Punchestown with the same team of horses and they're all looking to peak for each of those meetings. It's not a case of, let's say, obviously you don't want to get them peaking too early.
No.
But you still want to be winning those grade ones, and that is very much the feeling you get with the DRF, that these are massive races in their own right. I see Nicky Henderson called the Irish Champion Hurdle the Champion Hurdle Trial.
Oh.
When he was asked about Steve.
Oh, good man, Nicky. Good man, Nicky.
If you've constitution held, you're entitled to be plucky, but...
What did Willie say on RT or Racing TV afterwards? He says, I think Michael Buckley's got a horse over there that we might have to beat. But sure, look, he'll throw a party either way. I think he throws a big party, right? So Willie's happy either way.
He could do, I don't know. But look, yeah, and that will be fascinating. And it will be wonderful then, whatever happens at Cheltenham in March, were Constitution Hill to come back to Punchestown for the Paddy Power Champion Hurdle there.
Yeah.
That would be, you know, and take on Stateman again. That'll be magic. But that is what you want. And look, I know people would say, oh, they were all Mullins horses and I was saying at least they were there and people are giving out that even about that statement, but they were and they made.
They were there and they were all trying.
Yeah, well, they definitely were trying. Yeah, Danny Mullins was definitely trying over the weekend and, well, he had a cracking weekend. Let's talk about the Arkell. Ruby, from a jockey's point of view, obviously the Irish Arkell of the weekend we'll get to, but from a jockey's point of view, the Supreme Novice and the Arkell, which is a better race to ride in?
That's easy. Depends on which race you're riding the best horse in.
Okay. Yeah. Let's assume
I used to love the Arkell on a 14-1 shot. No, it does. They're two different races, but again, it depends on what you're riding, PK.
Yeah.
You can go out in the Supreme with a really good ride, and it's a great race to ride in. You go out in one that lacks a bit of pace, and you can't get in a position. You're thinking, oh my God, is this the way the week's going to go? And you go, likewise, you go out in the Arkell down to the first. I think it was this, that, and the other was famous.
Yeah.
Hit it halfway up, and boom. Did I enjoy riding in the Arkell that year? No. Did I enjoy riding when I rode under? So Duvan is earthy up. Yeah, I loved it. But it depends on what you're riding.
Well, to that point, you mentioned this, that and the other, and Footpad as well. Big mistakes, obviously. Footpad went on to win. This, that and the other didn't. So is it crucial for a novice to get into that rhythm early in the article? Or can you get back from those mistakes?
It can be. It depends. And look, Footpad was probably fortunate in that the two in front of him that year had gone quite hard. And they folded and came back to Footpad more so than Footpad did anything else. So, look, you can get lucky and get away with errors in a race or the horse makes or a jockey makes and you can recover from them. But that just depends on the race and the nature of the one you're in.
OK. Rory, my notes say we had a big trial for this race on Saturday. We had a big pointer to this race on Saturday, I think we'll now say. We'll let Ruby delve into that, obviously. Let's talk about John Bonn.
Yeah.
Has he anything to be worried after Saturday's race?
Well, he's got El Fabiolo to worry about, who pushed him very close to the entry last year. And El Fabiolo had less experience as a hurdler than John Bonn had going into that race. That was the pair of them were putting up career best performances at the entry, I think. I mean, maybe not everyone would agree with that, but I think that it looks that way on paper. So they followed similar paths through, and there's no reason to think that El Fabiolo isn't improving at the same sort of rate as John Bonn. So that's one of the really interesting clashes of the festival. That wasn't talked about much until now, but it's quite an obvious one when you think about it, the way the pair of them have come through and the tests that they've passed. So, yes, clearly we shouldn't be thinking that he's somehow miles clear of El Fabiolo because the form book says differently. But
what about the thought that he might be a better chaser than a hurdler?
He is a better chaser than a hurdler, I think. Although, you know, to be pedantic about that, if he was over hurdles this season, he'd be a better hurdler this season than he was last season. That's progression for you. He's progressed. He's a very good jumper of a hurdle. I went back and looked at the Supreme again for the first time in a few months. That's just a race and a half, isn't it, from last year. His jumping was really good in that, given the pace they went and given that he was trying to go with Constitution Hill. He got in a wee bit tight to the last, but his jumping was superb in the Supreme, and he's a very good jumper of a fence as well. He was very good at Sandown. You can knock that form to a degree. You know, he's beaten Boot Hill 8 lengths. Boot Hill's then gone and been beaten further at Doncaster, giving weight away, as we said, to Tommy's Oscar, and Tommy's Oscar's not going to go to Cheltenham. So you can crab that a little bit. But what was impressive about him there was, A, how easily he's gone through the race. He's done what Aidan Coleman wants him to do. And then Boot Hill closes him down at the pond fence, and it looks like it's going to be a race for a couple of strides. Aidan shakes him up, gives him a reminder, and he's cleared away really nicely. He's also pinged the last couple of fences when he needed a good jump, and that's a really good sign. When a horse briefly comes under pressure, either they're going to, you know, fluff a fence and get themselves in trouble, or they're going to put the race to bed with a good jump. And he always seems to be the kind of horse who will throw in a good jump when he needs one and get himself back on the bridle. Not that he's been off the bridle too much in his career, it has to be said.
No.
But yeah, I wouldn't say he's flawless, but, you know, the only thing you can knock him for is he's not as good as Constitution Hill, and that's true of pretty much every horse.
Yes, exactly. Ruby, El Fabiolo, yes. Yeah, well, we're recording on Monday after DRF, so over the weekend, very impressive on Saturday. How did you rate the performance?
Yeah, I was really impressed by him. Obviously, Dysart Dynamo went a strong gallop, which was fairly obvious. But I think when you look back at that race, the strength of the gallop, and you realised like how many horses were struggling so early in that contest. But the one horse who always looked comfortable was Il Fabiolo. Yeah. As fast as Dysart Dynamo was going, Il Fabiolo was travelling behind him really, really strongly. And Darrell Jacob at times was even pulling back off Danny Mullins to try and get his horse to settle. His jumping, yeah, he missed a couple again. He'd missed early at Fairy House. He missed again at Leopardstown. Is that a negative or a positive versus John Bonn? We know that if Il Fabiolo misses, he knows how to get a leg out.
He does.
He knows how to recover and go and jump the next. That's probably one thing we haven't seen with John Bonn, is him make a mistake. And it was probably a worry maybe with Footpad going to the arc, and he'd never made a mistake. Then he makes one at the first down the back, gives the water an extra foot, and he got himself back into it. But you know now with Il Fabiolo, he's going to miss one and what he's going to do next.
Exactly.
Whereas we don't know what John Bonn's going to do if he misses one. Maybe he'll miss one at the Kingmaker.
I thought that was a positive. For me, I thought a few people were saying, well, you need to jump better at Cheltenham. I was delighted with his jumping because he got in tight to the fifth last and he's made that mistake at the fourth last. It's not, given the speed they were going, it's not knocked him out of his stride. He's back on the bridle straight away. That's a really, really good sign.
Interesting angle. Horses who make mistakes, novices who make the odd mistake but recover. Well, that is very much a positive. The other Mullins horses, obviously, there's lots of them. Ruby, Appreciated, Flamebearer, Dysart Dynamo, you mentioned, Sanwah. Can you see all of them rocking up in the Arkle?
Big question. San Roy unseated very early, and I thought was starting to sneak onto the back of Bam Bridge. We'd put him up as an each-way closer. Mm-hmm. He may well have, the way the race was developing. Appreciated, I was slightly disappointed with, but at no stage did I think Appreciated was going to win the race. but I can't have that appreciated, doesn't have that speed or that pace. I wonder that he just completely underperformed full
stop. He was a bit disappointed because I thought he was well enough positioned. He got the race run to suit him. He looked, I think he might have gone in a little bit tight to the second last, but otherwise he jumped okay. It looked like he'd be a big player, but then when he was asked to move up and challenge, there wasn't an awful lot there, was there?
And I think that even you could see that to the second last, he got in really deep because he didn't have the energy to stand back. And that really surprised me. I think he might have just been, for me anyway, and I could be looking at it completely through blinkered eyes, he was beaten too early. I thought if El Fabiola beat him from the last or halfway up to the last home, but the fact he had his goose cooked that far out, I'd say Bambridge definitely looked like he was a Turner's horse to me the way he came home. And he missed the last. He would have been a really good second. But for the bad mistake, he missed it. Yeah. He made it the last fence. So, look, obviously, Willie will have to let the dust settle on the weekend and regroup in quite a few departments. You know, he had plenty of winners, but there will be a lot of thought and consideration because ultimately, all of these owners bought these horses to run Dublin Racing Festival, Cheltenham, Punchestone, and they're there for the big days. So some of the cards will have to be reshuffled in the deck and you see where you're going next time. But I just wouldn't be writing the pre-seated off in the back of one run.
Okay. I was going to ask, can you see any of the beaten horses reversing the form of Cheltenham? I'll just go back to the Turner's Novice chat where you mentioned that the Leopardstown, you said, watch out for horses who are travelling well but just don't quite get home at Leopardstown because they can go better in the Arkle because of the way the Arkle is run at Cheltenham. So maybe Dicer Dynamo, was that too much?
Look, definitely the mile and seven would suit him better at Cheltenham and a couple of undulations will help him the way he freewheels as well. I would have thought El Fabiola had Arkle written all over him. He at all stages was cruising. You might think maybe that's where Appreciated fell down. Maybe if they were going a little bit slower, would he have had more finishing kick? And when you watch Bambridge, the way he came home, you're definitely thinking up and tripping him. That was just my general reading of it. But again, I know, as you said, we're doing this Monday morning. These are all pointers, and I think there'll have to be a lot of reshuffling of hands.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know, you know, what comes out of the racing in terms of the well-being of the horses who run at the.
Well, we'll have to assume they're all fine.
Yeah.
And they're all owned by different people, though. So realistically, the target should be the target, i.e. if they think they should go for the Arkle, they go for the Arkle.
You wouldn't think twice about running Sam Wah again, because he wasn't let down by his jumping. It was quite soft on seat, wasn't it?
It was
I don't know what happened. But Mark came off a couple of strides after they seemed to slip forward. And
hopefully he's okay as well.
He had a bad fall.
He had a bad fall on Sunday. Sort of Davey Russell, they were both in Vincent's.
Were they?
Last night, so hopefully they're both
fingers crossed they're all okay. We touched on Bambridge, or Ruby did a couple of times. Rory, you mentioned on our Turner's chat, what you wanted to see from Bambridge was for him to jump the last, stay on, show good form and great Turners. I think it's literally to the script, to the letter, that's what he did.
Yeah, pretty much. Unfortunately, you can't bet on that, otherwise I'd have come out ahead on the weekend. But, exactly what I wanted to see. I wanted him, I didn't think he would have the pace to go with the likes of Dicer Dynamo and appreciate
not
that
many
he went
can,
forward.
To be fair.
Exactly. Yeah. But, he's, because you need to have real, grade one hurdles for him to be able to do that at 2 miles. And while he was a good hurdler, he was 2.5 miles at Cheltenham last year. He's coming through the handicap ranks. I thought he just needs a little bit further than that. He will be effective at 2 miles in a different kind of race, but the pace to go in an Arkle and that, I didn't want to see him at 2 miles. And he's shown that he was looked after through the race. JJ Seven's given a really good ride. When he couldn't go with him, he didn't sort of force him to try to keep in touch and get him making mistakes. He didn't quite see a stride at the last. I thought he was clever enough to get away with him. It was quite a good jump in the circumstances because it looked like there might be a big one there and there wasn't. And actually, when you look at it again, he's quite neat and he does look after himself over it. And then he's finished off.
He's a survivor. Yeah, he got all four legs out to make sure he wasn't going to come
exactly,
down.
Yeah.
You want that, smart horse. Fieldor, don't want to get decision time before we mention him. Could you throw him in there?
I don't think.
Question. Okay. Fieldor, Vauban, Pied Piper. They were first, second, third in last year's Triumph.
Yeah.
Are they just coming up short?
Well, it tends as a group. It always tends to be the way that that age group just tend to they've got quite a big gap in terms of their improvement to fill to be competitive that year. Often, I would like to see a high class juvenile just given a reasonably easy campaign the second year, unless you're going to go chasing with them, and then you can maybe press on with them. I think they mostly need another year to mature, and if they're pushed too hard to bridge that gap, which is I'd say maybe £20 difference between a good Triumph hurdle horse and a top class champion hurdle horse. And you can bridge that. And plenty of horses have won a Triumph or gone close in Triumph and then won a Champion Hurdle 2 years later. But 1 year later, just ask big questions of them through the winter. And I'd rather sort of go softly with them and let them develop. Fulbar's going to be all right. In Tallow, oh, he's yeah. not, in fairness, there's not a huge amount of him, is there? But
no, he's not. I agree with you. I think he is still improving. And by March, even by April, could be better again. And I think the same applies with Fieldor and with Pied Piper. I think they were a pretty decent bunch, but I think you realise this year exactly what Rory's saying. Mm. It's 20 pounds. I never thought of putting a figure on it. But now when it's explained, you think, yeah, that is realistically the gap.
It's very rare they do win open championships as five-year-olds, is it? Right, decision time. Ruby, what wins the Arkle Trophy?
If you're giving me a set of colours to put on me, I would take Simon Muneer's right this minute.
So El Fabiola for you. Lovely. Rory?
Yeah, off the front, just at the prices of the frontier at the moment, I think there's not enough of a choice between them. And as I said, one or two people are knocking El Fabiola for his jumping. I was impressed with his jumping because he was you know, able to get himself out of trouble and it didn't bother him. So I would just favour him. But for one we haven't mentioned, I thought he'd probably run up against, if they'd run John Bonn in the Kingmaker at the weekend, there's a horse who will run in that race, I think we're running the race, called Adex Desobo of Gary Moore. He's about a 40-1 chance for the Arkle at this stage. If he goes there and runs well, he's been running in handicaps. I'd rather John Bonn didn't turn up, to be perfectly honest. I think Adex Desobo could, if John Bonn doesn't run for whatever reason, and you know, Nickies don't always take up their engagements. Adex Desobo was a natural front runner and a very quick jumper. Now he needs to improve to be winning a race like the Arkle, but at 40-1, if he is declared for a Kingmaker minus John Bonn, then I'd be inclined to back him anti-post for the Arkle.
Because he'll win that, and then he'll shorten.
If it turns out to be an ordinary Kingmaker, I think he'll make all. He's an impressive. He's improved enormously in just a few runs. Unseated on his debut, just jumping, let him down. Jumped out to his right at Kempton on his second start. Then won well at Doncaster, was sort of holding on late in the day, and bolted up at Warwick early in the middle of January. The pair he beat, then both won. Third time lucky was a third in that one. Next time out, one of Venetia's also won next time out. So it looked like it was one of those races that, can you take the form that seriously? But it's been well franked now. He'd be a stone behind the very best of these. But yeah. This field will cut up for the Arkle, I would have thought, to some degree. And he, you know, trying to find a different angle at this stage, he might be one of those you can back anti-post each way and maybe have a decent position. I think his owner wants to have big runners at the Cheltenham Festival. He's splashed out a fair bit of money. Ollie Harris, I've mentioned his horse in the bumper already. And I think Adex Desobo, you know, a horse who hasn't had any coverage at all in this so far.
He wasn't even in the script.
He might just be interesting at a big price, given the way the form has started to work out.
Adex Desobo at Warwick when he won. He loves jumping.
Oh, he does. Warwick's a great track to see a jumper as well.
Brilliant. Yeah. Okay, a couple of shouts there.
By the way, I was putting on Simon Muneer's colours, the other half would be Isaac Swades.
Correct. Don't forget Isaac. Yes. We don't hear from Isaac as much. He does speak English, yes?
Yeah, Isaac was there the weekend.
Okay, very good. Isaac and Simon Muneer, not a bad little weekend for them. Few winners over the weekend. Right, so that's the Arkle. It's El Fabiola for Ruby, or Simon Muneer and Isaac Swade. Those colours anyway, so you can claim it if another one wins. And Adex Desobo, maybe a little each way touch from Rory. That's the Arkle done. We will move on to the Brown Advisory shortly. A reminder, if you're listening to this as a podcast again, do check out the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel. Chance of winning a free bet. Like, subscribe, comment, all the usual stuff, folks, and you will get that chance to win a 50 quid free bet. We will move on to the Brown Advisory. We're going to take a very quick break. Back shortly.
Betting can add a little excitement to any sporting event,
but only if it's done safely, responsibly, and within our means.
Never gamble when angry or feeling low.
Set yourself a limit for time, money, or both.
No matter what the problem is, gambling is never.
Is never.
Never the answer.
There's always someone to talk to when you feel gambling is becoming a stress.
Check out responsiblegaming.paddypower.com.
And welcome back. Question from Ray Gosson for Rory and Ruby. Of all the novice chasers running this year, which horse do you think has the best chance of competing in graded open company next season? Ruby, straight to you.
Probably El Fabiola.
Oh, okay. El Fabiola in the 2 mile division.
I thought you were going to ask, was that this year.
Oh, right, so, okay. No, that's true. And if you had an answer for a novice who could compete in Great Company this year, would the answer be different?
I haven't seen one.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so it would be different. Rory?
Well, on the same note, while El Fabiolo's winning Open Grade Ones Ireland next season, John Bonn will be doing the same thing here, won't he?
Fair enough.
Yeah, you're always looking at the brilliant ones to do that, and it's more likely historically that the brilliant two milers will be able to make a seamless transition to Grade One Company. We've seen that constantly with the Arkle winner
Edward Stone already. Exactly.
Yeah. He went safe there.
You did. Yeah. You went very, very safe. Yeah, there's outside the box thinking required for the Brown Advisory Novice Chase, or is it? Which is the race we're going to look at next. And Saturday, which is a few days ago when we were recording, on the Monday after the big meeting at Sandown. Jerry Calom, unbeaten in seven, Rory. He's the new favourite for the race. What did Saturday tell us about him?
I just watched the replay back again this morning. I watched it live from on the big screen at the DRF.
He got as big a cheer as any of the horses.
I really liked that performance. I thought it was a little... I don't think he was massively impressive at the time. And he looked in a bit of trouble around the home bend. Jordan Gainford wouldn't have ridden Sandown over fences that often, if at all, to be honest. Okay, of course, yes. Yeah, that's a fair point, isn't it?
They jump about 60 fences in that race.
Yes. you know, Sandown's a track that takes a little bit of knowing, and he wasn't... He maybe allowed himself.
I only had that answer because I did ask Barry Geraghty the same thing on Saturday.
Right, well,
and he came up with Hewick because we were talking about the track and riding the track, and I was saying, so what experience Sandown? He was saying, Hewick. And I was thinking, oh yeah, obviously, Hewick.
But, he maybe just got himself in the wrong position around the home turn, but that's being pretty harsh. Balco Coastal got the run of things. I just love the way he did it. You know, he's a horse who would prefer a softer ground and he'd prefer a trip. I like the way he's being brought along. He wasn't... he was drilled to win his point-to-point. His point-to-point, he scrambled home. We got up late to win his point-to-point by a head. The horse he beat didn't do an awful lot for Dan Skelton. And he was very impressive on bad ground starting out in bumpers. But he's been brought along more gradually than some of Gordon's previous stars, but he looks a proper old-fashioned Gold Cup type horse. He reminds me of Jadami a little bit. I just love the way he had his ears pricked almost everywhere, except when Jordan Gainford asked him for a big stride at the last of the railway fences, and I think he knew, I don't know, you shouldn't be asking me for a big stride here, and he did his own thing. And I thought he was clever there. He lost a little bit of ground, but he did the right thing. You know, he might have got away with throwing an extravagant leap. You don't want to be taking chances there. You want to get those fences in rhythm, and it's all about the horse's stride. And he probably wasn't quite in the right stride. Jordan had to ask him up at the previous one, which he came up very well for, but it meant that he was stretching all the way. But he was clever in doing his own thing at the last of those. That then put him in a slightly difficult position. He looked like he might get boxed in on the bend, but when he pulled wide, he was always going to get there. And I liked the way he went to the line, but also the fact that he had his ears pricked throughout. You know, he still seems to be learning a little bit about the game, but his attitude is really good. His jumping is excellent, I think. You know, but again, he jumps like a proper old-fashioned chaser, as I said. You know, he's not super fast through the air, but yeah, he's all about rhythm, and he gives the impression that he'd galloping all day. They've ruled out the National Hunt Chase in the back of that, thankfully.
Oh, yeah.
There's still talk from Brian Aitchison about maybe missing Cheltenham altogether, but I don't think
if it,
that's
if it got too quick potentially. Would
if
that
it,
be,
yeah, yeah, if it tur- yeah, if it turned out to be, you know, on the quick side of good, then you know I think they've had that discussion and they'd probably leave.
What day is the Brown Advisory? Thursday?
Wednesday.
So yeah, could be quicker because they'll be watering to make sure it got to soft by the Tuesday, and then
It's second guessing a lot. We've had rain at various points in the festival in recent years, so just trying to guess what the going is going to be like is never easy. There's not an awful lot of rain in the forecast in the next couple of weeks, but again, long range weather forecasts are just not really worth looking at. But yeah, if it came up quick, that'd be an issue. I thought it was quick enough for him at Sandown, but yeah, he's a tremendously likable horse.
Yeah,
you can probably knock his form to a degree and ask what exactly he's beaten.
But everything is the answer to that,
though. Yeah,
because he's never been beaten
put in front of him. But yeah, the way he goes about it is just enormously likeable, and he's going to keep improving. So he's a really, really likeable prospect for the future.
In a year of powerhouses such as Mullins and Elliott and Henderson winning potentially a lot of races, it would be some story were Pat Neville to win this race with the real whacker, assuming he goes here. There's still talk of the Gold Cup. Has he a chance?
He does have a chance, yeah. I mean, he will lack experience of a big day, but he's won twice at Cheltenham. So, and he's had very little racing over hurdles. Pat trained him here for his debut. Pat's then moved over to share Sue Smith's yard. It is Sue Smith's yard, isn't it? No, not Sue Smith's yard. And Duffield's yard, rather. And he had to wait to get his licence. So he was acting as assistant to Anne Duffield last season. So the horse ran in her name, ran very well in a couple of he ran very well in the River Dawn, for example, last season. But clearly he's come into his own for the switch defences. The race sort of fell apart on his chase debut, but he jumped really well, battled back when he was headed at the last by Indigo Breeze. Mm. That he let the form down in the handicap chase here. Yesterday, I thought he'd probably run pretty well. And I suppose the question you can ask about that is, that looked like a real staying performance at the time, and he did stay 3 miles over hurdles, but he was more impressive, dropped back to 2.5 in the Dipper last time out, where he comprehensively outjumped some very good horses. Monmoral was disappointing at the weekend, but...
If Connections were watching Mighty Potter on the weekend, would they think, nah, we're going, or Brown Advisory? Or would they just think, look, it's the horse?
Yeah, I think probably... But again, they're not thinking. They're still thinking Gold Cup.
Gold Cup as well.
They're
clearly
not going to be frightened. They're not going to be frightened off by a novice chaser if they're thinking Gold Cup. He stays 3 miles. He didn't look short of pace last time out. And again, because he goes forward and he jumps so quickly, he might end up being more effective at a shorter trip, even though he does have that requisite stamina that he's shown over hurdles. But yeah, he's been very likable. Small fields. We don't know what he will do if he doesn't dominate. He didn't go forward last season over hurdles. And he ran good races. Obviously, he stepped up considerably as a chaser. So I don't know what he'll be like if he's taken on for the lead. Mm. And I don't know how he will cope with the atmosphere of the Cheltenham Festival. So there are questions there.
A lot of questions for a horse's second favourite in this race.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with his form. You know, it's easy to say, well, you know, he might be overrated. He got the run of things. That was a really good performance in the Dipper. You watch it back, there aren't many holes in it. Okay. It's just that thing about, you know, if you're looking at trends, what do you need to do in order to put yourself in a position to win a race like the Brown Advisory? You know, he's the lack of experience at Cheltenham last year would count against him a little bit. And, you know, people will knock the fact that he's trained by Pat Neville, but Pat's done a very good job with him this season and is doing pretty well overall. So that wouldn't worry me. Yeah, I think he'll drift. He's the kind of horse that people will try to pick holes in him, and he ends up being a 10-1 shot in the day. He's been a drifter in both of his chase starts where he's won at Cheltenham.
Yeah.
He's been very easy to back. Again, people just don't quite buy into. He's not sexy enough. But what he does on the track is impressive, and he very much deserves his place. But if you want to back him, I think you can afford to wait as long as possible.
He'd be the most ironic British-trained winner of the festival, he to be. Ruby, Guy or Domain Neal, we've been playing the kind of bingo between this and the National Chase. Was Patrick Mullen's case hardened at the weekend if he wants to ride him in the National Chase?
Definitely wasn't softened. But that said, if you look at last year's Brown Advisory, Lomprese beats Ahoy Senor and Guy or Domain Neal is third. You look at this year's, it's probably hard to say it's a better race. Mm. Probably isn't the best race. It doesn't look a better race to me on paper anyway. And especially with the uncertainty of what might or might not run. Jerry Colom being the obvious one. I was impressed with him at Sandown at the weekend. I know the National Hunt Chase has been ruled out for him, but he doesn't qualify anyway because he hasn't ran the distance. So you're talking Guy or Domain Neal, Sir Gerhard's up in the air, what trip he's going to go. You have Tyne Hill, who was very good in the Cato Star at Christmas, had blown out a Newbury before that behind Mac Fabulous. Ramillies disqualified the other day at Nace, or demoted even at Nace. James de Burley blew out at the weekend. The Devil's Coachman likes really soft ground. Falco Coastal, hard to see him turning the form of Jerry Colom going further. I wouldn't anyway. And then you're down to Gentleman's Game. I think it's a wide open race, but I don't think it is an outstanding contest. And that's probably, to answer your first question, weakening Patrick's case.
Okay, so we've turned around. Poor old Patrick probably went in thinking, here we go, I'm getting the ride on this fella in the National Hunt. And,
yeah, no, look, it could do, but I don't think that this race is as strong a renewal as last year's race, and therefore, if you're looking at it from Gaillard de Menil's position, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Well, again, you can look at that through the prism of Ramillies, and he looks a bigger contender now than he would have a few weeks ago.
Definitely.
And again, you've made the point you wouldn't really want to step him up, but he saw it out well enough. And then he was idling in front.
Nicky say anything about City Chief the weekend?
No, I didn't say, but obviously City Chief won, and that puts him in the picture for the
same colours as well.
Yeah. Joe Murray Donnelly. What about Sir Gerhard? You touched on him briefly. He's won over two. To go from 2 to 3 miles in one jump, pun intended. Can you remember Willie ever doing that with into Grade One company?
Can you remember Willie going from 3 miles
to two?
To two.
Yeah. But that is a big jump. Would that, like, if you were sitting there and you're told, right, Ruby, you're on Sir Gerhard in the Brown Advisory, hang on a sec, how do I ride this fella?
No, you just take a lead. But when you look at Sir Gerhard last year in the Ballymore, he was keen enough under Paul Townend, over 2 miles and five. Would fences settle him better? He did settle well at Goran Park, but that was back at 2 miles, so it's hard to tell. He'd look really settled in maiden hurdles as well. So do you go all the way to 3 miles with him in one step? I don't know. It'll be an interesting conversation, but and a lot will depend as well on what Willie moves from the arc into the turners and what way you slot, put the pieces together to make as good a jigsaw as you can.
I'll put it this way. Sir Gerhard's best chance of winning a novice chase at the festival could be the Brown Advisory. I keep saying the RSA. Brown Advisory, because Turners looks pretty hot.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like he's going for the arc.
I said trend-wise, Rory, though. Run to a Brown Advisory?
No, one run to a Brown Advisory would look a big negative. I think the further up in trip you go, the more experience counts, I think, over fences.
And I actually think that boils down to the amount of mileage that's in the horse's legs through the season.
Yeah.
Like marathon runners, the amount, it's like...
They get a base level of fitness.
No horse wins a Grand National without having had 3 runs in a season.
Yeah.
It's not because they need experience. To me, that's just mileage.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go straight to selections, folks. Rory, your idea of the winner?
Jerry Colomb.
Jerry Colomb.
Yeah.
Very good. Very impressive at the weekend.
I couldn't disagree, but I don't have an overly strong opinion. Galiel De Lito, her form got abused at the weekend, but I more likely think she might run the Mrs. Paddy Power.
Yeah.
The golfer was third.
The form's worked out really well with the golfer winning, and she had him well behind it at Warwick. In the Mrs. Paddy Power, she'd have a penalty to Carrick for winning that grade two. And the penalty structure of that race is not particularly fair to novices, because you don't get half penalties.
No.
You get full penalties. So it's not particularly... they might think that's not enormously appealing, given that she'd be getting the Mayor's Alliance in novice company. So, and she's a big price. She's 25 to 1 in the place, I think.
And a bigger price too. One, I thought, came home well at Leopardstown, going up in trip, looked like he might suit. Just, like, it's throwing a name out for a suggestion. But I thought I Am Maximus would improve again going out in distance. And
it's interesting. He was the only one to stay on the inside.
Yeah.
He goes left, right.
So Danny rode him bang down the inside to cut out the going left.
Yeah.
And it seemed to work.
Yeah.
And he came home nicely enough.
He's been called a few names, I Am Maximus.
Probably has. But adamantly chosen probably franked Jerry Colomb's form as well.
Yes.
You're asking what did Jerry Colomb beat? Well, he beat adamantly chosen at Limerick. Mighty Potter beat him at the weekend, so...
So Jerry Colomb, tentative from Ruby, no strong, but you're pretty keen there straight away. There's other horses like Ballygriffin Cottage, Devil's Coach from Gentleman's Games.
Yeah, Ballygriffin Cottage pulled up at the weekend in the Titan at Weatherby, and I think he bled as well.
Okay,
so that's him out of the equation. He looked exciting first time, but he wore a tongue tie.
Fair enough.
Which is a bad sign first time there.
Okay.
And pulled up a fair way from home.
Okay, so. Interesting shout, though. Galileo Toe, we might get to her next week because we'll be talking about the Mrs. Paddy Bears, Mare's Chase. Don't forget, if you are listening to this podcast, it is available on the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel. Ruby, I believe we got some nice treats coming down that channel. Maybe around Cheltenham time, you were in a pub Friday with a certain ponytail.
You have me really confused now. I was definitely filming in a pub last Friday. You say a pub like it. Filming.
You were in a pub.
I was in a pub. You're dead right, PK.
In the morning. Morning porter. A bit of morning pints.
10 a.m.
With Mr. Rich Ritchie.
Mr. Paddy Power.
What were you talking about?
We talked about everything that involved pretty much the majority of the horses he owned.
Fair enough. Okay. So do, as I said, subscribe to the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel. Another question for you on that channel. This is a good one. Rory and Ruby, what is the worst priced favourite at the Cheltenham Festival? I'll let you think about that.
I thought of a really snide answer.
I have a snide answer too. I just have to open the race.
Oh, it's not runner money back. Okay, don't give me a silly one where a horse is not going for the race.
No. My snide answer was going to be anything 16 to 1 or shorter for any handicap at the festival is terrible value.
Okay, all right, okay.
You know, there's no entries for the handicaps, no weights for the handicaps, and yet there's prices for all those handicaps.
Right, I get you.
You cannot be getting involved in short price horses without an indication of where they're going. Well, and again, I was speaking to a representative for a bookmaker at the weekend, and he said, we're committed to putting prices up for these.
Yep.
Essentially, it's just saying, this race is happening and we will be betting on it. You know, you don't have to have a bet, but, you know, people... I used to like looking at the handicaps early, and when entries came in.
Okay.
You can work out roughly.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, it's just the Irish horses will obviously get their
their 6 pound
penalty marks, but you kind of know what that's liable to be. So I used to think, I'll get in there early when I see the entries and look at, and it's just pointless. It really is.
Okay, rule out all horses under 16 to 1 in handicaps. Anti-post now.
I must make a note of them and see.
We'll have a look. Ruby, what was your
handicaps the week before? See what I was going to ride.
Yeah.
No, I wanted the back. What you wanted the back anti-post.
Worst price favourite.
I opened because we're moving on to the Ryanair.
Go on.
And I see Galloping the Champ is 4-6 favourite.
Yeah.
The Ryanair.
Yeah.
That's the worst favourite.
Well, you'll get your money back.
Yeah.
Because we are as Ruby.
That's not the question you asked.
Okay. Yeah. He is 4-6. The reason he is because we are non-runner money back. So if he doesn't run in the race, he gets your money back.
By definition, you do get some funny prices in there.
Yeah.
But you also get a few risks because people don't, you know, because odds combiners know horse A is very unlikely to run in a certain race.
Yes.
You will get some prices that are out of line there. Less and less so as time goes on. And, you know, you will have these constant arguments. You might as well back it at this price. It's not going to turn up. You get your money back anyway. But who knows what might happen.
Exactly. You have to price it up. But Owen Lawless, great question. I hope you're happy with those answers from the lads. Ryanair chase time. And we start with, who else? Alaho. And the first question is, how is he, Ruby? Because we haven't seen him.
He seems well. He's doing plenty of work, PK. All systems going. He seems bang on track for the Ryanair. It'll be a different prep for him. Does that mean he'd be as good a horse? I don't know. He definitely seemed to be a horse that improved with runs. Even if you look at him last year, he started at Punchestown. He improved from there to the Kinloch Bray, and he improved again to the Ryanair. So it's probably hard to know what he will be or what Alaho you get first time up. Could you be opposing him? Would I be against him? Most definitely not. But it will be probably a different Alaho.
It's kind of like backing Willie Mullins as a trainer, isn't it? Because we know the horse, 100% horse, wins this race. He just wins. The only question mark is, can he be as fit or as ready as he was? Like, he did it with Kuviga, but she was a different animal,
yeah,
yes?
Yeah, but he started with her 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 and 10 were her least impressive performances as she got older. So definitely, he's done it with Penn Hill, which is probably even a bigger training performance than any Kuviga 6, to go and win a stairs hurdle first time. Like, just even the extra distance of a stairs hurdle. So that was particularly... That would be the one that would stand out to me, to show he can do it. But Alaho now, as a 9-year-old, getting older, first time up. Now, he obviously was quite close to running before he had a hold-up. So you would be hoping that with that pre-season in the tank, before you had to back off, it'll wear out. It'll still be there to you for this end of the season. But it is a slight question mark. And he'll have the mileage in, as in all the work he can have done at home in, but he won't have the runs.
Does he need to be, this is a good question, does he need to be 100% to win this race?
I think it's very hard at Cheltenham. But being 100%, look, what's the difference between a good horse and a great horse? So good horses can throw in a sporadic, brilliant performance. A Blue Lord springs to mind. A Christmas in Leopardstown. Unbelievable performance, but he didn't back it up. Did that unbelievable performance just empty him out at this time of the year? He might bounce back at Cheltenham, but he didn't back up a brilliant performance with another spectacular performance. And is Alaho, what you're asking, far enough ahead to underperform and win? I hope so, but I wouldn't be certain so. Rory?
You haven't ruled it out, which is that shows how high your opinion of this horse is. Because for about every other horse running at the festival, nearly, the answer is no. If they're not 100%, they don't win.
Well, Tour is an interesting parallel because he wouldn't have been 100% for the Ryanair.
No, and he'd run into King George, so he'd run at Ascot, Kempton, and it took a long time to get over to King George. But like We were working Vitor, looking for life, looking for spark, nothing happening. He's working terrible. I'm thinking, I'm going to ride Vlad Cerulido in the Ryanair. I'm going to ride Jackenham to go to Cup. Vitor's not even going to go to Cheltenham. And then I remember leaving and going to Cheltenham. And then David Casey stayed back. Willie just threw him out in the field all day. Just last roll of the dice. What do you do? And for a couple of days out and a different environment, he started to turn the corner. So on the Monday, David rode him and thought there was life or a spark or there was something there. So, Willie just brought him to Cheltenham. But, and then I decided which would be harder to watch winning, Vitor or Val Sarlido. So I rode Vitor. But to me, there was no way. I'm not sure many other people would have ran him other than Willie Mullins. Yeah.
And he wasn't. So to go back to the Alaho parallel, slightly different. Fitness versus spark.
He was fit as a flea. He had all the work done, hadn't missed any time. He just wasn't sparking. He wasn't showing you that vibe at home that he was in great form. Willie did get it out of him, but it's a different scenario to Alaho, really.
Sorry for stealing. We were talking about this off air and Rory mentioned that fitness versus spark. I totally stole that off you, Rory.
You certainly did.
Yeah, but at least I told everyone that I have absolutely no talent.
But it's interesting to look at that because you tend to just think about any horse coming back with an imperfect preparation as being a similar scenario. But there you've got two very, very different things. One with a horse who's clearly in very good form but hasn't got the miles, which might be the issue on the day, hasn't got the race fitness.
And he'll have the miles. If you imagine him running in the John Durkin, which is the first weekend in December, so he would have been in training August, September, October, November, and that's still his run in December. So he has a lot of mileage in the tank, but it's just whatever a race brings, that extra effort of a race that brings a horse forward that you cannot replicate at home, that's what he's missing.
Such is his shadow over this race. We spent a lot of time on him and he hasn't even run essentially this season. That's Alaho. Let's talk about a couple others. Fakir Dudery, Rory, will he run, I guess? Because he didn't at the festival last year.
No, he won the Ascot Chase on bad ground last year. And there's been a lot of talk in recent years about the Ascot Chase, very good Group 1 in its own right, coming too close to Cheltenham to be running horses there and backing up in the Ryanair. I think that's less of an issue if the ground comes up good. But again, for some of the other horses we're talking here, a lot of them are entered. Certainly the English-trained horses are entered in the Ascot Chase. Fakir Dudery won it well last season. He's definitely a Grade 1 horse. He's spent most of his career running in either Grade 1s or Grade 2s, and he's got plenty of wins to his name. He just comes up short against the very, very best. Against a superstar, he's a bit of a workhorse. He was beaten, 20-odd lengths when he was second to Alaho a couple of years ago. He always pulls it out. He always tries. He looked beaten. He's looked beaten in both his starts this season, but he will keep pulling something out and trying all the way to the line. So he must be an absolutely fantastic horse to have anything to do with, but he's not quite in Alaho's wheelhouse, really, in that regard. But, if Alaho doesn't make it, or if Alaho's not quite at his best, then it becomes a different race. There's no reason why he can't go Ascot and run here if Ascot's not on particularly deep ground. But if it was, because he's such a trier, I think it would take it might just take a bit out of him and leave him a bit flat for Cheltenham. And there are plenty of options for a horse like him anyway. Entry worked well for him last season. So that's the question. And if we're going on to other horses in the race, then the Ascot Chase and whether the Ascot Chase is the ideal stepping stone or whether it's too close to Cheltenham is the big ask. My view is an Ascot Chase and good ground would be the ideal stepping stone for a horse who's looking to sort of make that step up to the next level. So there's a couple in there who would be interesting on that.
Yeah, he's favoured in the anti-post market or the future racing market for that race. Shishkin is second favourite. So this looks like it's going to be the target for Shishkin, the Ryanair.
Looks that way. He's obviously not had some... Again, talking about horses who've not had ideal preparations. But it's a strange one, Shishkin, because obviously he had that blowout in the Champion Chase last year and they did a bone scan afterwards and found out that he had issues which were correctable. And Nicky Henderson seemed very happy with him going into the Tingle Creek. He seemed to be, the vibes before that were that...
he's back.
He's back and he was working well and he was going to go and win. And within seconds of him getting beaten, Nicky was like, he's a Gold Cup horse, he's not a Champion Chase horse. And I thought that was a remarkable change. The fact that he wasn't even entered for the Champion Chase, I just thought that was... Listen, it was a disappointing run for a couple of reasons in the Tingle Creek. And I threw up questions about his well-being and about whether maybe he had a couple of hard races last season. They were just starting to come back to him. Since then, he's flipped his palate and needed a minor operation to correct that. That wouldn't be a massive worry going forward. Obviously, meant that he had to. He couldn't run at Kempton, where he was planning to run over 2.5 in the Zaviniaco Conti. He'll go to the Ascot Chase instead. Nicky's still talking about the Gold Cup as a possibility. The Gold Cup is too much of a stretch, even for Nicky, I would have thought. But yeah, the Ryanair looks a real possibility. He's always looked like he would stay 2.5 without any bother. The issue with him in the Tingle Creek wasn't that he needed further, though.
Yeah.
You know, his jumping was nowhere near as assured as it was last season. He was out to his left. He'd obviously be ask us kind of try. If you're going to jump out to your left like he did at Sandown, it will be worse. So you know that will ask questions of him. He needs to come through a big test there. If he does, then I think he becomes a massive player. But you know that is quite a big ask for him to be absolutely spot on for Ascot, then to come out of that well and go to Cheltenham. But if he goes to Ascot and passes that test and doesn't look like he's disappearing off to his left at the fences there, then
the angle of the fences,
the
track. But down to Swinley Bottom, if you're going left in Ascot,
yeah,
you seem to lose loads of ground. You seem to be in the middle of the track all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not. And horses who do that don't do it anywhere else, or don't do it to the same degree. They might correct themselves to the left. There's something about the.
Yeah.
It might be. I think it's the way the ground sort of.
Yeah.
Takes
I
you
often
that
wonder
way.
Is just the defences set slightly off the rail, ever so slightly, because it doesn't appear to turn more on the inside than it does on the outside. But you do see it, horses. Going left at Ascot or fence is not good.
Mm. So Surname did it, but he won so handy, but never really seen again after.
Altior did it.
Yeah. The angle of stepping up and Trip Ruby for Shishkin, I hate this angle of a horse who looks like he's on the downgrade and they throw him up and trip under the assumption he's a little bit slower, but we can still win a grade one over 5 furlongs or 4 furlongs more than his horse.
Shaq and Bourgeois is the classic example, stepping up in the Kinloch Bray. It didn't work out for him. I would have always thought Shishkin, though, looked like a horse that wanted further.
Yeah.
Okay.
You never watched him in a 2-mile race thinking, wow, he's running away. He always looked like the one that's coming home and staying. So from the word go, I'd be in the same camp as Rory here. I think he's always looked like one that wanted a bit further.
Same sort of style as Altio, really.
Yeah.
Very disappointing at the weekend, Blue Lord. Could you see him rocking up here?
I don't know. I don't think that was just a true performance from Blue Lord for whatever reason. Paul, he didn't travel at the Dublin Racing Festival like he did at Christmas.
No.
All the way at Christmas, you were thinking, wow, he was locked off him. But maybe Gentleman to Me had improved and was going a mile an hour quicker at the Dublin Racing Festival than he had been going at Christmas.
Well, yeah, he was definitely better. There's no doubt about that.
And I haven't worked that part out yet.
Okay, right. Let's get selections. Who wins the Ryanair Chase, Ruby Walsh?
Oh, sure. How can you go against Alaho? But look, when you're going non-runner, money back.
Well done.
I don't believe there's been a 100% commitment to the Gold Cup for Conflated.
Really? Okay.
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Gordon says he's going Gold Cup. Eddie O'Leary has said, not Eddie, Michael has said, hasn't ruled out the Ryanair. I think at 8-1, non-runner, money back.
Okay.
I think he'd be a lot shorter, Rory, if he lined up.
Yeah, there. I would have thought he would be. I mean, he would have been second last year.
He would have been second last year. Just it's only non-runner money back.
And obviously, so if Alaho doesn't run in the race at 8-1, is
I wouldn't take
massive.
12-1 about Conflated Anti-Post, but I would
take
fancy
the non-runner money back angle. Back. Very good. Okay, Rory.
I wouldn't be dipping in the water at this stage because of the uncertainties, but I would be keeping a close eye on Shishkin. And seeing if he gets to Ascot, okay, because, and I could forgive Shishkin doing one or two things wrong at Ascot, because I think, you know, as I said, the Ascot race, even though he's got the class to win it, there are a couple of things that aren't ideal: the preparation he's had going into it, and the fact the track won't really suit the way he's jumped this season. If he can overcome that, then I think he might get crabbed for a winning performance. But I'd be a lot happier if he shows that the trip is fine for him, which looks like it has always looked like it'll be fine. Then I think he might end up being a lot happier at Cheltenham and represent value. But of course, he could go to Ascot and bomb out horribly.
Yeah.
If he does what he did in the Tingle Creek, and then I wouldn't want to touch him. But I think he could probably do one or two things wrong at Ascot, not shorten up massively, but become a more attractive bet.
Okay.
The other one that should have got a mention, got no mention, is Pick Dory.
Yep. Yeah. We're running over time. Sorry, Paul Nichols.
He's in the Ascot. Now he's the kind of horse who could easily win the Ascot Chase and shorten up remarkably.
Yeah.
He's only run once at Cheltenham and he was well beaten in the Triumph Hurdle. That was a really tough ask for him.
I do listen to Rory though. I do listen a good bit. So basically, if you take him at 12s, you can get out of him by the time you get to the Ryanair. You will be in front. Is that right?
He's the one horse who looks like he could shorten up, because that race, Ascot race, will be ideal for him. I wouldn't massively fancy him in the Ryanair, but Ascot will suit him better than Shishkin at this stage. And I can see Pictori actually winning it and then shortening up, and then I'd want to be getting out
of it. So going on to Shishkin, yeah. So, yeah, we're recording on Monday, and Fakadudri is 13-8 favourite for the Ascot Chase, whilst Shishkin 3 is Pictori 7-2. So that's how they bet at the moment for that, which is interesting. OK, that's pretty much everything. I've got one more question. It's from Bondi 007. Lads, in your opinion, which race does American Mike have the best chance of winning at the festival? Rory.
If he was campaigned for it, you could argue that the Albert Bartlett was the race that would suit him best, but he's not been campaigned for it. Of course, he missed the run at the weekend for unfortunate reasons.
Mm.
So he's not had the ideal prep. He hasn't impressed me in two starts over hurdles. He still has scope to do better. I would be thinking about next year's Cheltenham Festival with him rather than throwing him in the deep end. This time around as a chaser. His dam was placed in the Irish National, so he's got a lot of scope to do better over further. But I'm not sure he's the kind of horse I'd want to be throwing into a race like the Albert Park at this stage.
So the Brown Advisory 2024 is his best chance of winning the festival.
Yeah, exactly. This season, his best chance is moving the whole calendar.
No, he didn't say this season. No. Bondi, or
there
she.
There is future racing, lad. Future racing.
Yeah, Bondi didn't say which year. Just said best chance better of winning at the festival. So
the
there you go.
National
Chase 2024. Ruby, which race? Mike?
I still think there's a huge amount of potential there. If I'm guessing which race he will line up in, I would imagine Ballymore. I wouldn't write him off, but I would love to have seen him at the weekend. But look, again, as Rory said, they're unfortunate circumstances, and we wish all the better stood.
Big time. Our condolences indeed. Okay, right, lads, that's it. Thank you very much once again for a cracking look ahead to the Cheltenham Festival. A reminder, do check this out on the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel if you're listening to it as a podcast. We'll pop up a few enhances on the Cheltenham section of the Paddy Power website as well from the lads, so check out for those. Next week, we're looking ahead to the Mayor's Novice Hurdle, the Triumph Hurdle. We'll have a bit of a chat about what happened at Dublin Racing Festival. Was there any stories from the Dublin Racing Festival about the Triumph Trial? And the Mrs. Paddy Power Mayor's Chase, a couple of horses got mentioned for that already.
The Triumph Pointer.
The Triumph. Did I say the Trial? Pointer. Did I say Trial, Ruby? My apologies. He never picks me up on anything. The Triumph Hurdle. We have the opportunity for you to get those questions on the show. Do comment on the YouTube channel, or you can email at fthm@paddypower.com. But that's it, folks. Look, have a great week. We can all relax now. DRF is done and behind us. And then we build up again to the weekend.
Indeed.
And then we build up again. We'll be back next Tuesday at noon on the YouTube channel. Until then, stay lucky. How many weeks? 5 weeks to go. Just five. Talk to you next week.